This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run with Lin-Mark Kuzu-Chuang and Wang Xiaoning. Now, in about half an hour, Chuang, you're going to be speaking to the chairman of the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commission, Al-Ishsal Ishak, in honour of World Press Freedom Day.
That's right. He heads the institution, which is the telco equivalent of the Securities Commission. They promote the industry as well as regulate the industry. And they've got this twin mandate, where it's not always clear which is more important. That will form one of the centerpieces of the discussion. Of course, we'll also be talking about 5G. There's the old de rigueur right now, very much flavor of the day, but there's also equivalent amounts of concerns as well. And a whole bunch of other things, including their universal service provision, which is a fund with about, 8 to 10 billion ringgit in its coffers, meant to develop the industry, but also has its concomitant concerns within.
Exciting stuff, and that's going to happen after the 8 o'clock news, so remember to stay tuned for that. And speaking of flavours of the day, as you said, Chuang, ride-hailing is another one of them, and Uber's first Wall Street buy rating has endorsed their comparison to Amazon. Now, Wedbush Securities analyst Igal Arunian has said that Uber is just scratching the surface of their full monetization potential. He gave Uber an outperform rating and a $65 price target. Now, other analysts have perhaps taken a more cautious approach. D.A. Davidson gave a neutral rating and a $53 price target.
Uber, which started their roadshow in London on Monday, has already had its book filled by day two. I think the argument is that Uber is its earnings will be diversified, so it just won't be dependent on just ride-hailing. They're looking at outside of their core services, which includes food delivery, freight, and autonomous vehicles. And they plan to raise as much as $9 billion next week in what is expected to be the biggest IPO so far this year.
Well, so far this year. I think the price range being offered to investors was between $44 and $50 per share. That's quite a narrow range, actually. So even the more conservative ones from, for example, D.A. Davidson, this $53 price target is actually a small premium, but a premium nonetheless. Wedbush, $65, that's quite a good premium. It's about 15-20% upside. So it seems as if at this point in time, the share is quite, I don't know, but fairly priced, but it's has priced fairly for everybody involved.
It seems to be at the lower end of the range. I think markets are cognizant of what happened to Lyft, right, which hasn't done well at all. Listed at 72. I think last night might close at 58. Well, so Lyft, I think, investors are, mindful of not overpaying.
Well, Lyft is America, Canada, right? But Uber is much more global in nature. But what they did leave behind in their global roadmap was Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia, of course, as we know quite famously, they lost a battle.
They
sold to Grab, right? Including to its partners. And basically, this is a region which is 630 million people. And it's come to a point, I think, in young people's lives. They ask themselves the question, do we want to buy a car or do we just want to ride-hail the rest of our lives, right? And that's a big opportunity that I think Uber doesn't really have anymore.
And I think because Grab and Gojek as well in Indonesia, what they're doing is that they're basically positioning themselves to become super apps. So you can use them to pay bills, order food, find house cleaners. And they're, of course, as you mentioned, two of Asia's most valuable unicorns. So a lot of young people nowadays, it's not just the fact that they don't need to buy a car. If they have the Grab app, for example, they can use it to do so many other things. And that's something that Uber missed out on, capitalizing on that share of the market. Now, it's also worth noting, Xiaoning, as you mentioned, Lyft prices. And Lyft actually edged up slightly yesterday. So they are now trading at above $60, so $61.50 a share, up 4.7%. I know, still below their open price.
Listing price of $72.
Amazing. Now, aside from that, as Uber put out an amended IPO filing last week to highlight some of its operations in New York. Now, there were regulations approved by New York City last year, which capped the number of for-hire vehicle licenses and created pay minimums for drivers. And Uber has said that this had a negative impact on their financial performance in the first quarter of this year and may have a similar adverse impact in the future.
Yeah. So ahead of the IPO, activist investors also won some board revamps are happening in Uber. And this is interesting. In an era of corporate governance and board oversight, the chairman of Uber is actually a man called Ronald Sugar. Get it, right? Brilliant. So basically, these investor groups, they want John Thain sits on the board of Uber. He wants him to be, I guess, rejigged. because John Tain heads the, he's the former Merrill Lynch guy, right? Mm-hmm. Heads the audit committee at Uber, but he's also got a very close relationship with a CFO, a guy called Nelson Chai. And also even Ronald Sugar himself. Ronald Sugar sits on the board of Apple and Chevron and other public companies, which of course raise concerns that there might be conflicts of interest as well as knowledge about their ongoing operations.
So, and whether he has enough time to actually be chairman of
time,
Uber.
Yeah.
And continuing the IPO conversation as well, there was another IPO in 2019 that's been the best so far. Their shares surged 163%, and that is the company called Beyond Meat. And Beyond Meat makes plant-based meat substitutes, and it was founded in 2009. It's based in Los Angeles. It became widely available in the US in around 2013. And apparently, this vegetarian meat substitute, they're made from mixtures of pea protein isolates, coconut oil, and other ingredients meant to mimic chicken, beef, and pork.
Must be yummy.
Can't be yummy. How can it be yummy, for God's sakes?
I mean, it's obviously very popular.
Well, that's the thing. So, is this
the rise
case
of the vegans, Trump?
Well, exactly. So, is this indicative of the paucity of good stock market listings so far? Or is this indicative of where millennial and diets are going, or tastes? Or is it a bit of both?
I think it's down to the company's good performance. They reported a revenue of $88 million, up 170% from the previous year's sales of $32 million. And I think there must be a huge growing market. And their IPO was the best debut in 10 years since the financial crisis.
And they priced their shares at the higher end of their last provided range. So they priced it at $25 a share, and it's trading on the NASDAQ, and their shares still surged 160%.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? Is it faddish or not? Because tastes are flighty, right? And sometimes people's tastes differ. And over the long term, maybe it might go back to being more fundamental. And you want to have real meat rather than artificial meat. So you never know.
But I think it's the meatless trend, Chuang. People are looking for alternatives and a healthier lifestyle.
That's right. That's why it's a trend. It's fetish.
No, I think it might be the norm, because the plant-based meat industry saw sales in the US of $670 million. And that's a long way. There's a lot of room to grow there.
And it's not just Beyond Meat. So there are also other big companies that are getting in on this trend. Nestle is going to sell its own plant-based burger to Americans, and they've called it the Awesome Burger.
I wonder how awesome, but yes.
It's also exactly. It's also a very classic American thing to name something. Tyson's Food as well, which is the biggest U.S. meat processor, they own a 6.5% stake in Beyond Meat. But last week they sold their holdings, saying that they're looking to develop their own line of alternative protein products. And of course, in countries like the UK, supermarkets are allocating dedicated vegan areas for shoppers. I think it's more than just a trend, Chuang. I think it's a
lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle shift. People are becoming more aware of their carbon footprints, for example.
Who would have thought that bell bottoms would ever come back, right? Who would have ever thought that, you know, those carrot pants would ever come back? But they did, right? Do you know what I mean? So fads are fads for a reason, they're trends for a reason, and they come and go. It's all cyclical. But I tell you what, it's more lasting in nature, right? It's the fact that because companies are Beyond Meat, right? They use much less animals in their production facilities. So which means fewer greenhouse gases, right? And fewer greenhouse gases means a cleaner earth, and a cleaner earth means maybe we can stay around for a much longer time. And for that one reason alone, I think these kinds of entities, not necessarily just in food production, but also across the board, are more here to stay.
We do have some statistics, actually. So one study found that Beyond Burger generates 90% less greenhouse gas emissions, required 46% less energy, and has 99% less impact on water scarcity and 93% less impact on land use than a quarter pound of US beef. So,
is there statistics on taste, though?
You see? Okay. But taste can be manufactured. Taste can be massaged. There's another company called Finless Food. Finless would love it, right? Finless Food basically, I think, it conjures up fish-tasting dishes without actually using fish, right? It's interesting.
Isn't that a lab-grown meat substitute?
Lab-grown tuna. Lab-grown salmon, lab-grown whatever, mackerel.
Yeah, so there's a difference between that, right? Because Beyond Meat is a plant-based meat substitute, but lab-grown meat is actually meat. Like, they take cells from a tuna and feed it vitamins and essentially grows it in about, and in 3 weeks you have tuna,
right?
Except it's maybe not in the shape of
don't
an actual
catch
fish.
You know what I mean? There's also Shake Shack, right? Have you all been to Shake Shack before?
Yes, I have.
What is Shake Shack?
It's this Yummy burger that was like all the rage in New York 10 years ago.
Real meat or not real meat?
This one is real meat, Chuang. This is your kind of food.
So yeah, so you know, the real meat real is beef. Real meat is not dead yet, although I suppose you could say that it is.
I guess, but they also up in after hours trading. So, you know, they made $133 million in revenue. So obviously they're doing something, right?
And there are actually some Shake Shack outlets, you see queues of like 2 to 4 hours.
Really?
Yep. Well, you can look actually into their website and the webcam will show you the queues. So you know whether you should go or you shouldn't go.
Oh, yo, really? Yeah.
Yes.
That's interesting.
And they just opened one in Singapore, which is the nearest we have.
Ah, so that's what you can use 5G for.
Yeah, just check the webcam.
Just to make a reference to my grill at 8:05 with MCMC.
And make sure that you can get your burger on time. Okay, stay tuned for more conversations after this. You're listening to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.